Now I grew up down an old dirt road in a town you wouldn't know. My pops picked the place up for $1,500 back in 1960.
Hey, what's up, Wisconsin? You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman. Welcome back. We're sitting in the fishbowl downtown Waukesha, 217 Wisconsin Avenue. And man, oh man, has the hunting season started off with a bang already. We've been shooting ducks and geese.
A bang.
And turkeys.
You had to say a bang.
Yeah, of course. Do you think that's coincidental, Danielle? Danielle Fairman, our co-host, who just got back. Actually, one of the cool things about having Danielle as a co-host is if we miss a show, if one of us is off hunting some crazy place somewhere or dealing with their dog like Danielle's doing right now, Bandit's in the studio with us. If you want to swing by the fishbowl and check it out, Bandit joins us in the fishbowl live almost every Thursday, I'd say. But Danielle, you were actually gone for a show because you were in North Dakota or South Dakota, right? Robin and
Dakota.
I were fighting about it.
All right, man.
Well, we were disagreeing. Our loyal listeners, the Kennedy clan out in Waukesha, or Oconomowoc, and Kevin Potter, want to shout out to him. He's up in Richfield listening tonight, and he's one of my good goose hunting buddies. You were in North Dakota.
There you go. Who won the battle? You or Robin?
I don't remember. I couldn't remember if it was North or South Dakota. Oh. What's the difference anyway?
One says North and one says South.
Correct. Which I have a problem with the people who named it in the first place, because when they put a North and a South or an East or a West on a state, name it a state. Name it
South Dakota.
A regular state.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Virginia and West Virginia. Now that's confusing because there's not East Virginia and West Virginia. It's just Virginia and West Virginia. But you, how was your trip?
Our trip was definitely not one of our best. So Bill and I have been going for 4 years. It's kind of like our little bonding time. And Bandit, of course. And we got there, and we usually go around the Jamestown area, but when we got there, we talked to a couple.
So you freelance it, though? You're not out there with a guide and
no guides at all. We base our place out of Jamestown, but then we always end up going like an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours opposite direction. We just start there because I made friends with the hotel lady, and it's a locally owned. It's a locally owned mom and pop motel. Sorry,
what's it called? Let's give them a plug.
The Pretty Red One.
It's the Pretty Red One near Jamestown.
Yeah. I don't know.
Now
Two Rivers Inn.
Not to be confused with Trivers, Wisconsin, which is Two Rivers. So you're out there, you're freelancing, you're driving around. I mean, I've never done this type of hunting in North Dakota before. A lot of my friends do it. You get in a truck and you start driving. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, so we drop off our enclosed trailer and we start driving around, and it's usually packed right in Jamestown. That's where everybody goes. But then once you start traveling outwards, that's when you start finding fields. And unfortunately, this year it was more of finding fields that are combined. First it was beans, then immediately it was corn, and then immediately it was ammonia. And it was just horrible. So we were prepared for a field hunt like we normally do, but this time it was just all water hunt, flooded fields, but it was a lot better than last year because last year wasn't a drought. So this year was a lot better for water, but we got there too, like a week early. Everything started coming down and seeing pictures of people limiting out when we were leaving, which was very unfortunate. But, you know, you're bound to have a bad trip every once in a while.
So they were essentially spreading liquid manure on everything that you were hunting.
It smelled horrible. And once we started walking in the water, it just smelled like straight sulfur. And I have a very sensitive nose. Like, I can smell
a sensitive olfactory.
My olfactory is very sensitive. Correct.
Okay.
And then everything just stunk, just really stunk. And I hated it.
But
we still got our ducks. We still hit close to our limits every single day. I still have my duck and mac and cheese in the
you
field.
You kind of buried, I have to be honest, you buried the lead there. I mean, the fact of the matter is you had a very successful duck hunt.
We came back with 36 birds. We came back with our limits.
That's fantastic. I, Everybody, I don't even go by what I see on Facebook anymore because people exaggerate so much on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
But it looked like you had a really successful trip. I mean, all I saw was pictures of ducks, and you can't smell over Facebook.
No, you cannot. There's no scratch and sniff button.
Well, as always, we are glad to have you back in the studio.
Thank you.
And I want to give a quick shout out to Kyle Schmidt of Northwoods Taxidermy because he's going to be joining you. Is that next week right away?
No.
Two weeks from now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Danielle and I are going to be here next week, and then the following week after that, she's going to take the show solo with Kyle Schmidt from Northwoods Taxidermy, because my wife, Rebecca Clayfish, for the very first time is heading down to our alligator camp in Catfish Creek, Florida with me, and
that's
I'm really excited about that. I'm probably more excited than she is about it.
She hasn't gone with you yet.
She has not, but I think she's going for the cultural experience of Central Florida. We hang out with all my redneck buddies down there, and of course we will sit in the hog blind at night and try to see if we can get some hogs to come in. And speaking of hogs coming in, we've got some guests in the studio today who I'm really excited about. One of the guests, I have to be honest, one of the best was integral to me when I very first started waterfowl hunting. Now, you know, if you listen to the show or if you follow Danielle and me at all, you know that we had a television show here together in Milwaukee called Kill It, Clean It, Cook It for 13 years. Danielle was my co-host for that. And since then, I have the honor of working for the Outdoor Channel now. I work for the Fowl Life. And I also get to do cooking segments for Ted Nugent's show, Spirit of the Wild, which is like a lifetime dream come true to be on the Outdoor Channel and do that. And that's fantastic. But when I started waterfowl hunting and had zero gear whatsoever, and I don't remember if it was Facebook or if it was a newspaper at the time, but I contacted a guy who had a decoy bag for sale, and that guy's name was Josh Petrie.
I did not know this story.
Yes, this is the first time I ever purchased anything to go waterfowl hunting was Josh Petrie, and Josh and I have remained friends through all the years, and he is one of our guests today, and we've got him in the studio because Josh devotes a lot of his time and a lot of his life to getting new people in the state of Wisconsin involved in the outdoors, in hunting, in waterfowl hunting in particular. And so we're thrilled to have him on the show with us today. He's brought with him Michaela. Michaela, you're not nervous, are you?
Not really.
Okay, good. You shouldn't be nervous because all we're doing is really talking. And I'm pretty excited because, like, your first experience hunting was with Josh, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so tell me about it. Michaela, how old are you?
15.
So one of the most important things to me in life is trying to get new people involved in the outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, and Josh is sitting next to you, and we're going to give him the mic in a little bit, but I want to talk to you first. So tell me what happened that you thought, you're a 15-year-old student at Pewaukee High School, and you think to yourself, I mean, had you shot trap? How did you get interested, number one, in any of the outdoor activities? And then how did you end up hooking up with Josh?
I did trap over summer, and Josh went, so I saw him a lot. And then, and with Jen, too. And then, I don't know, he kind of just asked me. I thought it would be fun to try.
How did you get involved in trap? I mean, trap is one of those things. So when we talk about the sports in high school, in grade school, it's kind of one of those one of those subjects that can be a little taboo from time to time because you're using a firearm.
Yes, especially nowadays.
Yeah, especially nowadays. That's a good point. So one of the weird things, and I think we have to balance, trap teams are expanding throughout the United States. It's one of the fastest growing high school sports. Did you shoot trap, Danielle?
No, I didn't even know trap was an option. I played softball.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It wasn't an option when I went to high school.
I graduated in 2006. I do not even remember.
Yeah, and I graduated in 2010. So.
And I was on yearbook community, too.
The McGuanago High School team had the top two first and second place shooters, and the boy was the last man standing of like 1,300 people.
That's awesome.
That's Josh. Yeah. So, but one of the things that is talked about is the fact that firearms and schools don't mix.
Don't mix.
Everybody knows that, and everybody supports that idea. But we've got trap teams expanding so rapidly across the country, and traps really becoming important. In fact, kids are getting scholarships to college. They're shooting trap in the Olympics. I mean, they're shooting trap in international competitions. So you can't even have a firearm cased, a shotgun cased, locked in the trunk of your car and take it to school, which I think is a little extreme. I'm just going to go out there and say it. I think if you're on the trap team, you should be able to have something locked in a case in the trunk. But despite that, despite all the restrictions, but I want to be clear, I do understand the restrictions. I do understand the sensitivities of firearms in school, obviously. So how did you, Michaela, how were you introduced to trap even? How did it come up as an idea? Or how did it come up as something you thought you might try? Was mom or dad pushing it? I mean, did someone come up at school say, hey, you should really try this? How'd that come up for you?
That was definitely from Jen then. I was a little...
How did you know Jen?
From the gun club and my mom.
Okay, so your mom was involved in the local gun club, and
no, we just went there to like hang out with people at first.
You went there to hang out, so it was social for you.
And found out how cool it was, and you wanted to do it.
At first, I was super hesitant against it. I was not. I wasn't too fond of the idea at first. Like I was a little worried at first,
like being around guns or like being around a whole group of people with guns.
I don't know. It might have been a little bit of both. But then once I actually started, I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
So did somebody, when you went to these events at the gun club, was somebody, it was Jen, saying, hey, you ought to try this. Because I know Jen, and she had another engagement today, but she would have been with us in the studio too. But she's not somebody who minces her words, that's for sure. So she approached you, and what did she say to you?
She pretty much just told me to try it. And then I was very hesitant, but then she was like, no, just try it, just try it. And then I did. And I ended up loving it a lot more than I thought I would.
So you tried it outside of the school setting first.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what? Tell me about the experience. What's going through your mind the first time you're actually holding a firearm and you're going to pull the trigger on it? What's going through your mind?
I was kind of terrified. And I was using someone else's gun that was much heavier. And I was just like, I was freaking out a little bit. But then, like, what? I don't know. Just once you get more used to it and, like, the more you do it, it becomes like a lot more enjoyable just because you're more comfortable with it, I guess.
Yeah, because once you actually realize what you're holding and how powerful it is, but then I know Jen told you every single thing about that gun and where to hold it, where to place it, how to be safe. I know without a doubt she did it. And, or probably even Josh too. But I'm more from the girls. Go, Jen.
When we come back, we're going to go to break already. We're going to talk about the fact that you are a girl in what some people consider a male dominated sport. And we're going to talk about that changing and the good news about that changing and women involved in the outdoors. Then we're going to get into your first hunt. We'll be right back. You're listening to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman on 540 AM WAUK. We'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride.
Welcome back to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman on 540 AM, 101 FM, WAUK, the Shaw. Born and raised right here in the Shaw, I was. In fact, I've probably eaten more than you can count of the Panzeradas from Jimmy's Grotto right down the road. They're so good.
I just had my first one in years with Stephanie.
Yeah.
That was on here.
Stephanie. That was on here.
I can't say her last name. But I...
Verhalen.
No, that's Rita.
That's Rita Verhalen. Van Halen.
But I had a Panzerada. Oh, my Glanta. It was so greasy, but so good.
If you've never had a Panzerada, basically they take a calzone and deep fry it. But there's something about that crust that is magical. Mm-hmm. I always tell people, one food... The rest of my life, if I had to pick on a desert island and I had one food the rest of my life, it would be the Panzerada.
Bologna.
No, for real.
The Panzerada.
Yeah, for sure.
Out of all things.
Well, what else?
I'm thinking more
Tell
like
me what's
ice
better.
Cream.
Ice
steak.
Cream.
I want a tomahawk steak every day for the rest of my life.
I get sick of steak. And if you had like the supreme panzerotta, you could pick the stuff out of it. You could have it packed with everything and you could eat different
foam
stuff
marrow,
out of it
butter
each time.
All over it.
Yeah, that does sound very
with some
good,
mashed
but
potatoes.
Not every day. Give me the panzerotta.
And you get to eat it right
honestly,
in your hand.
It would honestly be between a panzerotta and maybe Chinese food. I love Chinese food.
I eat rice every day.
For real. Like Chinese food. So Michaela's on the air with us today. Michaela was a brand new... Did you hunt for the first time this year?
Yeah.
First time ever anything?
Yeah, ever, like
so,
at all.
So excited.
So we were talking... Before we went to break, we were talking about the fact that you... were somebody who had no experience, you were not exposed whatsoever to firearms or shooting or anything like that. And you ended up shooting for the first time with Jen and Josh Petrie out at the gun club. And how did that translate to you ending up on the trap team at school?
I'm actually not on the trap team for school yet, but next year I'm going to start on Maguanago's team.
Nice.
Are you talking about trap at the Southeastern Rod and Gun Club where Jen and Josh are? Is that where you're shooting trap?
Oh, yeah.
So the first time you're up there and you're trying to shoot at something flying in front of you, what was that like? Take me through that in your brain, because not very many people are very good at that.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this story.
I missed every single shot out of that box.
But you still shot, which is awesome.
Yeah, I did. I didn't
really
hit anything, but...
That was the first day.
Yeah, so then what's the feeling you get when the first time you actually hit something?
It's definitely a feeling of reward, even though it's like just a piece of clay. It's like, I don't know, it just feels really good hitting it.
All right, well, I want to talk to Josh for a second, because Josh is going just about nuts with his hand movements and stuff over there. And if, I've known Josh for long enough to know that he's definitely built up something to say. So, Josh, you meet Michaela, a 15-year-old girl at the time, and you think to yourself, you and Jen, your wife Jen, and you are like, we think this kid could actually be good at, and she might be able to, you know, she might be interested in hunting. What I'm trying to do here, folks, for the folks listening, is I'm trying to take you through the genesis of what it means to encourage people to get into the outdoors, to get into firearms, to get into hunting, to get into sporting clays. There's so many different aspects in Wisconsin that you can become a part of. So Josh, take me through. We have a case example right here in front of us, somebody who a half a year ago never touched a shotgun in their life, never hunted in their life, and now is going to join the trap club and has been out hunting on a successful hunt. She's actually harvested some ducks. What's going through your mind? Because I think you need to teach those out there who might be leery of doing it how easy it is and how much it means to people to be able to get them into the outdoors of Wisconsin.
I mean, a lot of it is just... A lot of people are like, no, guns, oh, I'm scared. Just bring them along, just like they did. They came along, they saw everybody shooting, seeing how much fun everybody was having. And my wife, being as persistent as she is, you know, pushed her really hard and was like,
you're talking about Michaela.
Yeah, and just try. And I went up there and I showed her, you know, keep your weight on your front foot for your balance. And she shot and she was like, whoa. And I was like, you want to do it again? Yeah.
So with someone, you said you're 15, correct? So Josh, do you think it's like a, like, did you try, do a 12 or a 20 with her? Because there's obviously 12. a different thing.
12,
so you just
semi-auto.
Go all for it. Because I remember I brought my sister one time and I gave her a 20 gauge to start off with and then a 12 gauge. So she was doing the comparison. But yeah, just like.
I was a little worried because she doesn't have the largest frame. And I'm like, I hope she doesn't. Because I have seen people shooting.
Get
go
that
straight on
shoulder.
Their butt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that hurt. I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
She did everything she was supposed to. Good. She shot and then just kept shooting. And then once I found out how good she is in school and that she takes AP classes, and I'm like, you know, this kid deserves to be able to go out and do something. And I feel we're pretty good guys, me and John Cranford, to be able to take people out hunting. And we scouted Friday night after throwing his motor back together and... found a bunch of birds set up on the spot. Unfortunately, the first day we were too far this way where she actually almost got hit by four different ducks.
Oh, gosh.
Just buzz, little teal buzzing the edge where she was like, oh, I could feel the wind off that one.
Isn't it cool hearing the whistle of their wings?
It was.
And we had her pull, you know, I said, shoot, you know, and they come down through the decoys, and they were just a little too far out, and the fact that she kept trying, and then we're sitting there, it was about 9:30, and I'm like, It's like, you know, I don't have anything going on tomorrow if you want to go tomorrow. And she's like, really? And I'm like, we're setting up on the other side. We set up on the other side, saw some ducks right away. All of a sudden, here comes three wood ducks, and she shot, and two dropped, and took another shot, and then one of them somehow snuck away and then ended up flying away. And she's like, that was so much fun. So much fun.
How long did you practice at Southeastern Rod and Gun Club before you actually went or took her hunting or you went hunting?
My bad.
We'll actually get right back to that after the break. We're going to be talking about Michaela, how she started transitioning into the hunting, which is very exciting. You're listening to 540 AM, 101 FM. Listen on Spotify and Pandora.
Train a coming, it's rolling around a bend.
So I always feel bad interrupting a song because I want to sing it so bad. But welcome back to Raised in Wisco. You're listening to 540 AM, 101 FM. You can hear us on civicmedia.us?
Yeah, I think so.
Spotify, right. Pandora. Tell your smart speaker to play The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK. We're back. We're talking to Michaela and Josh about Michaela's trap shooting and first hunting experience. Now, before we got to the break, we were talking about how long were you at shooting trap till you felt comfortable actually going out with Josh? Because I'm sure he offered it like right away. Oh, she shot the gun. She did good. Let's go. But how long till you felt comfortable going out like on the boat and actual hunting experience?
I only did trap over the summer. Like that was like the first time I did it like consistently.
Yeah.
And then I don't know, by the end of it, I just felt more confident, even if I might not have been the best, but I definitely was a lot more confident than at the beginning.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just thought it would be fun to try.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure Josh took us out, Bill and I out before. They're great people to hunt with.
It was a lot of fun.
And the part that I like the most, yes, harvesting animals is a great thing, but having fun and talking.
Yeah, exactly.
That always makes the trip too. Because if you just sit there and shoot birds, yes, it's a great time. But like, I want to joke around. I want to.
That's
make
one of
the
great things about waterfowl hunting, though. You don't have to sit quietly like you do in a deer stand. And I mean, I don't want to downplay how cool and awesome deer hunting is. And we're in the rut right now. I mean, the rut is starting right now.
Yes, it is.
If you choose a time to sit in a deer stand, it's about now until about 2 to 3 weeks into November. And that is the time to sit with your bow in a deer stand. And I'm seeing deer chasing. That's also a warning for you if you're on the roadways because those deer are rutting. And I always tell people it's kind of like dudes at a bar after a few drinks. I mean, they want to introduce themselves to the ladies and nothing's going to stop them.
How you
so move. Watch out on the roadways too, but
watch for deers.
Watch for the deers. So Michaela, when he first said to you, "Hey, I think I'd like to take you hunting," what's going through your mind? And were you thinking like, "I don't have gear, I don't have stuff to wear. What do I do? How did he talk you into actually going from the trap field to the outdoor field to try to shoot a duck?
I mean, he just asked me straightforward, but I was a little nervous at first with that too, since that was like actual hunting. It wasn't just clays at that point. And then I had nothing too, so I was a little worried about that, but then I was able to borrow stuff from Melissa, so that was nice too.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to ask people to borrow stuff for your first try. A lot of people don't have this stuff, but plenty of friends of the people taking you hunting, the mentor who's going to take you hunting, they've got friends with gear. I mean, I have an entire Cabela's, I think, in my garage.
Oh, I believe
at this stage of the game. So what's going? Take me through that first hunt. What time you show up? What do you do? Did you go on a boat? Did you go from shore? What kind of hunt was it?
Did you have a quick trip breakfast?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we got up super early. It was like 4:30 or something like that. It was really early. And then
that's not super early.
That was very early for me.
I've gotten up at 2 a.m. to go hunting before, but yeah, for a teenager, I'm sure it's my daughter thinks that when I finally get her out of bed at 5:30 to go sit in a turkey blind at 6:30, she thinks that's early. So yeah. you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to go hunting. Then what?
And then it was about hunting. So then it was very dark outside. I'm a little scared of the dark.
That's what happens before the sun comes up.
Yeah.
Muskrat.
Oh man, and there was a muskrat. That thing is. I thought a muskrat was a kind of fish. I'm not gonna lie.
Okay.
So I was terrified when I saw that. It was like
a muskie is a type of fish. A muskrat.
That's what I was thinking about.
Is a small furry rodent.
I was terrified.
Larger
of
than
it.
A real rat, though.
Yes. It was terrifying. It just like its head just popped out of the water, out of nowhere.
Like next to the boat?
Yes, like right in front of the boat.
Oh my goodness. Well, it. Okay, I'm not going to divert, but there was a time we were in Florida and we had a water moccasin swim over into the boat and kept going over the boat. That was, I'd venture to say, that was probably about as scared as I've been on a boat, except, well, I guess when the gator head comes in the boat, too, that's a little
that
scary.
That sounds terrifying.
So the muskrat pops up. You're at the boat launch, and you're going to, now you're wondering, should I even get on this boat and go out into the lake where you're going to be on a boat in the middle of the water in the middle of the dark?
We were already on the boat, so there was no going back.
There was no turning back at this point.
Yeah.
All right. So you head to your spot. Was it a busy scene?
Like he said, there was a couple ducks that almost like hit me. They were so close.
Yeah.
But with like the spot we were in, they were all coming around us and we couldn't see them. So by the time we actually would have seen them, it was too late to like actually get them because they just came out of nowhere.
Sure. Was this before it was light out or was this after you were set up?
During shooting.
Josh, why don't you tell me about the setup that you were running, or what kind of preparation, what are you doing when you're taking a first-time hunter out?
Making sure that they're comfortable. We've got all the gear. Showed up with breakfast and came together and stuff.
Food is something that always makes everyone more comfortable.
You need
always
a snack bag.
Never be afraid to bring food.
I have an ammo bag and a snack bag.
Yes, Danielle, that does not surprise me. Your snack bag is probably bigger and more heavy than your ammo bag.
I'm going to fit that tomahawk steak in there somehow.
And that's when she thought that she brought her ammo bag up, but she's like, oh, I grabbed the snacks.
Maybe I'll throw this Cheeto at them.
Bill, can you go back and get my actual ammo bag? That'd be great.
Before it's light out, she's probably trying to put like beef jerky into the gun instead of a...
Yeah.
This just doesn't fit.
Josh, where were you guys? I mean, you don't have to give away your secret
spot.
We're
on a southeastern lake here that's got a pretty large marsh on it. Unfortunately, the first day we set up on the wrong side where we saw birds moving that Friday night. I was like, well, that point would be really good right there. And little did we know that the birds would be moving the opposite direction and almost hitting Michaela. So then, you know, when I said we could go the next morning, we hopped over on the other side of the same pothole, and we were just getting covered up in ducks.
So did you have any ducks come in, or did you shoot any ducks on the first time that you went out?
No.
No. What kind of spread were you running?
Wood ducks, teal, 2 mojos, and 3 goose decoys, floaters.
So you had, I mean, you had a fairly extensive, and you know, the nice thing about taking someone out, and I always, this is something that I live by. If I take most people for the first time turkey hunting, because it's one of the easier hunts. You can do it in a blind. Turkeys don't seem to be bothered by blinds. You can run a heater in it. Make sure that person you're taking out is comfortable. If they're too hot or they're too cold, that's going to ruin their first experience, and they're going to base a lot of that on their first experience. And one of the cool things, and I know, I mean, and Danielle, you and I have hunted before, and we go out of our way to make sure we're comfortable.
This is true.
I don't like to be uncomfortable when I hunt. I don't like to be too hot or too cold. And one of the nice things about going out in the earlier in the season or for the youth hunts is that the weather's usually pretty conducive to it. So you take her out, and obviously, Josh, you're doing everything you can to get this new hunter a duck, to get him on a duck. And you have one of your days that happens very often. You go out, yes. Everything seems right. You put a beautiful spread out there. You've got, you know, the guns are loaded. But I think people sometimes underestimate the difficulty of really actually shooting a flying duck. That's tough business. Way more difficult than shooting a clay. And you get through the day and you don't bag a bird. And now you're wanting to take her out the next day. So take me from there.
And I said, you know, I don't have anything going on tomorrow morning, and this youth hunt goes tomorrow too. And she's like, really? And we set it up, and John and I had a bachelor party to go to Saturday afternoon, so we went golfing and had some good dinner. And then Sunday morning she was up, and she's like, why isn't anybody up yet? We're supposed to be up by now. And then John and I, you know, we got up and we're like, all right, let's go. We're ready. And we got out there, and some, you know, we went to the other side of that pothole, and it was hour-ish into the hunt. Here comes a 3-pack of Woody's. She pulled the trigger and dropped 2.
Woo woo!
What? With one shot?
Yep.
Michaela, come on. So you're out there on your second day, and I just want people to realize and understand, you don't have to kill something to have a successful hunt, and you were actually hooked before you did kill something. It seems like you were jacked enough about it to want to go the next day.
Yeah, I was really excited to go again.
So you get out there the second day, he's got the spread in the water, and you're kind of sitting there. And I always think, I mean, one of the reasons I'm not great at shooting ducks is because all of a sudden they're there right in front of you, and I'm not ready. And then they're gone before I even get my gun up.
Oh, yeah, you sit there for like an hour, 2 hours, just, all right, put your gun down in your lap, and all of a sudden they're there. Oh, crud.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you something. This is absolutely true with me and with so many people. What are they doing? They're sitting on their phones. I mean, sometimes they're sleeping. But so often people are sitting on their phones and they miss an opportunity for a harvest because of that. So, Michaela, were you on your phone?
I was not.
You weren't on your
phone? Yay!
So these two Woodies, they come bombing in. They like the spread. They like the 3 Woodies. They like the spread. They like the spinners. And they're coming in like arms folded over, ready to do it right into the decoys. Is that what it looked like?
Yeah, they were like just about to like go down.
So what's going through your mind? Are you thinking someone's got to tell me to shoot, or I just pick up and shoot, or what?
I was a little nervous, but then I don't know. I just kind of shot them.
That's awesome.
I yelled shoot and boom.
Yeah.
Oh, so Josh did yell shoot.
Yeah.
So what is going through your mind? So there were 3 Woodies coming in. You pick up the gun, you shoot once, and 2 of them dropped?
Yeah, I couldn't even tell with all the decoys. I was a little confused between the decoys and the actual, like, birds. So I was, like, confused at first. Yeah, they must have been. And then, like, after the other one had flown away and I actually, like, realized that I hit 2, I was like, wow. Like,
that was
so rewarding.
Okay, high five. I wasn't even there.
I'm proud. You're doing the math in your head. You're saying, wait a minute, there were 3, and I'm only seeing 1 fly away. I must have killed 2 of them.
I had to at least hit 2.
Yeah, and so... So then you go to fishing them out. Did you have a dog with you that day?
No, we did not.
No. So you had to go fish the ducks out of the water. And what's that like, your first time, when you get to hold that in your hand and realize that all the work you put in, the practice shooting, somebody inviting you, going out there, putting a spread out, you know, your hands get cold in the water, you know, setting the spread, and finally it all comes together, and now you literally have your harvest in your hand. What does it feel like at that point?
I'm not going to lie. I was scared to hold the duck. I don't know. It just... His eyes like popped out and
it is a very surreal experience.
It
the
depends
first
on
time.
The shot. If you shoot it right in the head, then it looks a little bit different. But if you shoot it right in the body, it looks all perfect and like mountable and beautiful.
Yeah.
Or if you're like me, then you accidentally wing it and you have to wring its neck and its head flies off.
You don't need to wring its neck that hard, Danielle.
I always have a thing. I go twice and I go whoop. Well, my whoop is just dropping in, and then the whole body drops.
Well, and to be fair,
my hand, and I'm like, oh, poor duck. Even though you're dead, but poor duck.
Well, it is definitely ethical to make sure that if you have an injured duck, that you kill it as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also important to realize, and this is something, you know, I have found it with a lot of people, and the first animal they kill, they don't want to touch. And I think part of that is because there's an appreciation, there's an understanding, and there's a remorse that goes with taking a life. And that is not mm-hmm. something that we should shy away from as hunters. Some people think to themselves they should be embarrassed about the fact that they feel some personal remorse or pain about taking a life. I think that is one of the greatest things of hunting, because mm-hmm. only hunters who take something from the field or the water to the table have the understanding of the true origin of where that comes from. And someone who goes to a grocery store and buys a package of meat, they're never the ones who are taking the life of the cow that's coming from. And a hunter gets to understand that entire circle of life from the mm-hmm. beginning until it hits the dinner table at night. And I think it's important that we as hunters and outdoors people understand the gravity of what we're doing. And I think it makes us better hunters. It makes us better conservationists. It makes us better sportsmen. And at the end of the day, it makes us appreciate what we're eating, which is even more important. So I think part of that is one of the reasons I think first-time hunters sometimes struggle with touching something mm-hmm. that they killed, because it is a tough realization when you do kill something. And just like that, we've only got one segment left of this show. We've got Michaela and Josh, and Josh, his hands were moving, which means he's got something to say.
He's ready to talk.
We're sharing three mics in the studio here today. That's why we don't have a mic on everybody. When we come back, we're going to continue with Josh Petrie, Michaela, WAUK. We'll be right back. Woo! Welcome back to Raised in Wisco with Joel Clayfish and Danielle Fairman on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. And just like that, man, these hours go so fast,
so
Danielle.
Fast.
Danielle's back in the studio from North Dakota, and I think you're going to talk more about that in a couple weeks with Kyle Schmidt. Did you bring back anything to mount from North Dakota?
I did not. Nope.
What?
The one bird that I wanted, well, not the one I wanted to bring back, but there was a bird I wanted to bring back, and I popped its head off.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, that is why they call it taxidermy, right? They can fix that in the...
Okay,
yeah,
so I got
it would have been a tough one to fix. Is that what you're trying to say to me?
Oh, I got two stories with this one. Now, we're talking about retrieving, how you guys didn't have a bird, or, okay, reset, how you guys did not have a dog for the birds that you shot. Well, the first wood duck that I shot, I didn't have Bandit. Oh, no, I lied. I did have Bandit, but it was so mucky that I couldn't even walk in there. Like, you would walk in and just sink, like, 2-3 feet in muck. And then I saw a beaver, and it freaked me out. And I'm like, no, let's go away. But the bird was wounded, it was dead out there. So I actually was fishing before that. So I grabbed my fishing pole, and I had a treble hook on there. And I cast it out, and I reeled in my bird.
Yeah, I've done that before. I've done that many times.
I was so proud. Like, yeah, I got it.
I have hunted ponds by myself with a fishing rod because I don't have a dog with me. And I've also swam out in 55-degree water and retrieved a bird myself in the middle of a pond, which was not fun.
I had my first frustrating experience with divers. We're on North Dakota, and we're on this pond, and there was a bright canvasback. Like, it was beautiful, it was perfect, it was everything I ever wanted. And I shot it. I'm like, oh, okay, it ducked. Okay, I shot it again. It started doing its thing, and it rolled over. I'm like, heck yeah, I got it. Yeah, I finally got one. Yes. And then it rolled back over and started swimming away. It rolled over on its back. Yeah, on its back. And its feet were kicking and it stopped moving and started floating. And I'm excited. I didn't send Bandit out because I was just still, you know, living in the moment. And then it flipped over and swam away.
Yeah.
And then it dove down and then I never saw it again.
Yeah, I've actually had...
I was so upset. It was so emotional. I'm like, this is... I'm never hunting again. I'm over this.
Yeah, well,
like, this is messed up.
I'm sure that never hunting again lasted for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, pretty much. And I saw a bunch of birds fly in and I shot those.
It's not completely uncommon to have ducks, even non-divers. I've had mallards dive under and grab onto a weed under the water and not let go. Mm-hmm. And then you just can't find them. And that is frustrating. But it is important to make sure you go go after everything you can as hard as you can mm-hmm. to retrieve your harvest. So, Michaela's in the studio with us. And Josh, I want to talk to you for a minute. You took Michaela out. She was 15 years old and was her very first time hunting. You had your first day. You did not get any ducks that day, but she was so excited about it, you went the second day. She shoots two woodies of three that come in. The excitement and the feeling's unbelievable for that. How do you feel as the mentor? Because I feel like very often when I take somebody out, I'm much more excited for them to get a shot and them to get an animal than I am for myself.
It's one of those, like, you know, proud dad moments, but I'm the stepdad per se, with no actual.
Okay, now you're just making it confusing.
No,
it's your father figure moments. Yes, I get it. Okay, so.
Well, you know, I don't have any children, and my wife and I have decided that we're not going to have any, but we like helping kids. And, you know, my wife's got this crazy Halloween walk through the woods tomorrow, and we're going to have like 40 kids at our house. It's all about getting the youth into the wild. And you can ask Michaela. I stressed both days. I'm like, just look at all the stuff most people miss because they're sleeping.
Yep.
Watching the sunrise and all the different colors and the birds start moving and all the different birds waking up and all the sounds and everything you're hearing and seeing. Most people don't even get to see, and that's the actual mm-hmm. beauty in hunting. It's not the harvest. It's the surroundings. It's, you know, being with friends, having a good time, making breakfast in the blind or out in the field or... It's very rewarding. I was brought up in a hunting family, so I was at it at a very young age, and it stuck.
Yeah, anybody out there, and I guess I will always carve out, you know, the vegan. If you're a true vegan, I mean, I think that you're kind of excluded from the category if you try to be a true vegan, and I would argue that it's almost virtually impossible to actually be a true vegan because there are meat products that are used in the harvest of vegan products, but we're not going to get into that. My point is, if you're a meat eater, really there's nothing more ethical than harvesting your own meat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you said the sunrises. I can't tell you how many times when you are in the waters of the woods and you are watching the woods or waters wake up.
Yep.
There's nothing better. And 90% of everyone sleeps through that, and they're waking up while the sun's already coming up. There is a feeling that you get when the birds start singing, when the animals start moving, mm-hmm. and the sun starts rising that is absolutely unparalleled with anything else in the world. And then for me, it's just as important putting that on the table and making wild game and living a provider lifestyle.
And you know where it's coming from. There's no hormones. There's
no 100% natural. You're not going to eat any more organically than you would. Now, you were excited to talk about something before we went into the break.
That was not just worried about the kill. It's everything else you take in the mm-hmm. hunt and the beauty of everything. And even, you know, from when it's dark to the sun coming up, if you're sitting in the stand or you're on an afternoon hunt, watching that sun drop and watching all these animals go to sleep, and then a bunch of other animals wake up. You know, you got your coons coming out, coyotes are making noise, deer are moving big time.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's really indescribable. The other day, for example, I had a really rough day, a really rough day at work, and I thought to myself, I don't have a great turkey spot right now where I'm patterning the turkeys in the afternoon. I don't have a great goose or duck spot right now. But I went and I took a small blind and four turkey decoys and my gun, and I set up in the corner of a field and sat for the last 2 hours. And I never saw a turkey. I never saw a deer. I never saw a single thing. But what it did was allow me to wash away the day.
Relax. Yep.
And sit there in the blind with nothing else going on. I put the emails away for the day. And I think something in today's society that we take, that we don't take advantage of, is that you can use natural resources as a real palatable way to ease anxiety and mm-hmm. stress of the world we live in. Because the reality of it is we all live too busy a lives. We all, especially in the United States, we're going 24/7. We're moving. Yep. We're hopping around. We're worried about the next email. We're worried about the next bill we have to pay. We're worried about getting our taxes together, making everybody happy. And just remember, Michaela is a brand new hunter, part of the newest, largest, fastest growing group, Women Hunters. And you're in the outdoors. Now you love it. Now you're hooked for life. That's because of Josh.
Yes, it is.
I have my gear that I still use, the bag I bought from him so many years ago. Danielle Fairman, we've shared a more than a decade-long friendship. Uh-huh. Stay with us. That's why we do this.